Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Glad to have you guys hanging with us for the next 30 minutes. Going to be a lot of fun. Ava's here.
I'm always
here. Don's
here. I'm here.
We are all here, and we are happy to have you with us. We're going to have a lot of fun today. We're actually going to be talking on a topic we missed last week. We touted it. Are your rifle cartridges matching your personality, Don?
Right.
We're going to do that. We're also going to talk about the aerated bait bucket controversy, something that I don't think has been brought up, and it's kind of an odd piece of enforcement. So sticking around with us. We are going to be back right after these words. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Good to see both of you. How are you today?
Good, good.
Bright and oily, as the saying goes.
Yeah, it's been great weather.
I am not going to complain at all about the weather.
At least in this part of the country.
Well, where the show is broadcast, yeah. I think for the most part,
it's been pretty nice.
It's been pretty darn
top
awesome.
10 days for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know. This weekend, it's going to be just into the 80s.
A little hot on Sunday.
As soon as we're done, I'm heading out to Port Washington and do a little salmon fishing. It's supposed to be nice, light winds, south. And it should be perfect.
What, not working out in Lake Michigan or what?
That's Lake Michigan.
Port Washington?
Port Washington.
Oh, Port Washington. I was thinking way out west.
Work with me.
Okay.
No, I'm going 4 hours, not 40.
That's one.
So I'm looking forward to getting out there. But yeah, the weather's been fantastic. It's one of those weird things. Last weekend, I was out on the river for one of the first times in a long, long while, and we were out trying to get some fish for a fish fry that we're having with the fishing league I'm a member of in town, and big picnic we're having, and so we got out early and launched down in Lake City, and he said, "Well, what do you want to do? We want to pitch jigs, or do you want to whatever?" And I said, "You know what? Let's go troll." And made about three or four, probably four passes, and got six fish. Had probably nine on. And then all of a sudden, it was boat central. It was a take of it fishing event coming out of Rochester.
Oh.
38 boats in the same area.
Okay.
And everybody trying to make the same
pass.
Depth stretch pass. So we're ready to make the cut. All of a sudden, this guy comes in out of nowhere. All of a sudden, he's in the way coming the other. We're just like, you know what? Forget it. We just pulled out. But
it's a big lake.
Well, it is. And the frustrating part was there's a lot of guys that don't know. They'll run lead core, or if they have four people in the boat, they'll run planer boards.
Oh, yeah. That's a mess.
So when you're on planer boards, there was a lot of 8 planer board spreads. So a planer board is basically a chunk of wood with an angle cut in it. When you put it in the water and you pull it, it's going to pull away from the boat.
Yep.
Well, when you have 8 of them, it's like 50 feet, 60, 70 feet on either side of the boat, you can't, you have to get
you
out of the way.
Take a pretty big swath.
So my buddy and I were using lead core. So we have two 10-foot rods and a short rod.
Yep.
That works pretty good. And we caught our fish and stayed, were able to stay relatively tight to, you know, where we were. But, you know, lead core, pretty amazing presentation. I've done it so many years. And it really allows you to get the bait that may not dive quickly, gets it down deep, and maintains the depth. So it really provides a very different presentation than does monofilament, where monofilament doesn't have that ability and you have to draw let a lot of line out. So that's a big kind of piece of the puzzle. When you're running the river, the other advantage is you can run fire line as a leader. So you're usually around 10 feet of fire line. That's all you need. It's dirty enough water. Fish don't see it. They don't really care. And, you know, deep diving crankbait, whether it's generally shad wrap, jointed shad wrap is what we use out there. But, it had been a while since I've thrown the old lead core down. I prefer jig fishing, but got the job done.
If you're trolling, it's a pretty simple way.
Yeah.
Troll and get to the bottom of it. What kind of depth are you fishing in?
16, 15.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, we're looking at about 90 feet of line out.
Sure.
And you'll see that lead core's got multiple colors. Every 30 feet's a different color. So you can count colors or you just do the line counter is what I do. So you're exact. You let it till it, you see it start to bounce. Give it a couple cranks and so it's just off the bottom is one method. The other method is if you have a bottom that's not rocky, or it's not snag filled. A lot of times we'll call it grinding, and you just grind the bill of that bait right into the bottom of the lake. So
yeah,
that works.
If it's a sandy bottom,
sandy or muddy,
yeah,
either one. Silt, you know, and sometimes it when it digs up that the fish are like, whoa, check this out.
Yeah,
and having a rattle in there really helps too, because that adds to the attraction factor. So
yeah,
lead core is a good technique, and it was kind of fun to be able to get that to happen. Now, the Great Lakes, we use the lead core too, only the difference is we're using 5-color, 7-color, and 10-color of lead. And then we clip on a board and put it on. 10-color lead is 300 feet. You always make sure you hand it to the guest you're with so when you reel it in to check it, they're the ones that have to reel it in. So if you ever come out, Don, you'll know if I give you, here's your 10 color, you might want to check that one.
What kind of depth are you getting down with 10 colors?
Usually it's a 3 feet per color, so
about 30 feet.
30 feet, roughly.
Yeah. I think the deepest I've been able to fish with is about 32.
Yeah.
Out in a little bay to knock.
Yeah, a lot of times they'll put it, and everything is speed dependent too.
Yeah,
the more it's very
well, it'll raise with more speed.
That's what I'm getting at. It's very susceptible to speed. So the faster you go, the more it's going to pull up.
Yeah.
So generally, the speeds on that.
Well, there's more line resistance.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Well, tell you what. Stay tuned. We're going to talk a little bit of bait bucket dilemma and. Does your cartridge match your personality? That and more when we come back. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us over the break. And, of course, we'd like to have you check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. And where else, Ava?
Facebook, please.
There you go. All the cool places. And whenever you're looking for something going on in the state, if you're wondering about seasonal, anything seasonal, whether it's here or anywhere to 50 states, that would be fantastic. So that works.
It's an easy couple clicks and you're in that Department of Natural Resources.
You're there. Absolutely. So speaking of natural resources, and, you know, one of the things that we've been talking a lot about, we always do talk about, is the invasive species, aquatic invasive species, right? Not that you've ever heard it before, but together we can make a difference, right?
Right.
So one of the things that has come up, And I saw the story and I thought it was odd because of most people, when you get minnows, you put it in a separate bucket. You don't dump it, put it into your boat, into your minnow.
Live well, or bait well.
Right? You keep it in an aerated box so you don't have to worry about dumping the minnows when you're done because it's separate, not in the boat.
Right.
If they're in your boat, you have to remove them because it's circulating water from the lake through that thing.
Right.
So I read this and I thought it was, odd. These two watercraft inspectors in Otterdale County said they interact with anglers, inspect their boats. It's obvious what they're looking for, zebra mussels and visible vegetation attached to boats and trailers. So if you're not familiar with it, those are two of the big invasive species. They can attach to your boat. Obviously, if you're in the water for a day, they're not going to attach to your boat for a day, but you can get them pulled into your live wells. So it's always important to what, Don? Clean, drain, and dry. Exactly. So the sentence goes, compliance with the AIS laws or aquatic invasive species overall across the state has been very good. We're seeing it like upwards of 95% of people that are arriving to this particular launch ramp with the drain plugs out, without weeds on the watercraft, and without zebra mussels attached. I would hope so.
Right. That's the nature of what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. What's more inconspicuous is they're looking for when the anglers exit the water is the microscopic aquatic invasives that hide in plain sight in bait, aerated bait wells and whatever else aerated in the boat. Live wells, right? They have to be drained. Zebra mussels, they're microscopic. They could be dozens or hundreds of them in a single liter of water. If the water, you take it to another lake and you've got zebra mussels in there or spiny water fleas that could transfer over and infiltrate that particular lake. Through the years of inspections with Otterdale County AIS Task Force, the team of these two guys has tried various methods in informing public about regulations to see what's effective. In the past, they tried to be firm with the violators, but now they're taking an approach of educating versus reprimanding on the first incident. The approach we've taken with the aerated bait coolers is people get one freebie chance with us, the individual said. And there's a reason I'm not naming them. If they catch an individual who they've already informed about the rules, they may not be so lenient the second time. If we notice that they're still violating the law and didn't straighten themselves out after their freebie, then we're getting enforcement involved. What inspectors and the DNR have heard from anglers is there's an interest in increasing the number of resources, freshwater availability, at boat launches so that you can wash your boat off and or have replacement water to fill your bait well with once you drain it, right?
Like well water or something.
Yeah, something that you could put in there. The DNR did a survey a number of years ago in Minnesota about AIS strategies. Leading thing anglers said, and boaters, they wanted public water access, running water, and having some type of garbage facility.
Why would they want water in their live well?
Because if you have bait in your live well, they wanted to be able to dump the bait and then, or dump the water out and then refill it with water that's not contaminated.
From the lake?
No. If you have fresh water available, it would be from a well. So at the launch ramp, you're dumping the water out of the lake from your boat, and then you can refill whatever container that would be. Make sense?
No, but I understand what you're saying.
No, go ahead.
So, a lot of times the wells that they're getting their water, they're pumping it right out of the lake.
No. We're talking an actual well that's drilled into the aquifer kind of thing, or city water somehow, whatever. City water is not good for your bait, but nonetheless.
But you're instantly in violation if you have any water in your live well.
But this is what I'm getting at. This is where I'm going. While the inspectors were able to tap into groundwater at one city-owned boat launch for the boaters to rinse off the boat or refresh bait buckets, that's not feasible in every lake in the state. They said before aerated bucket technology, it was obvious bait buckets needed to be dumped out because they likely came in contact with lake water. However, he thinks aerated buckets, which remain in boats without contamination for most fishing trips, are muddying the waters of the regulation.
This is why I'm having an issue with this, so you'll see in a minute. He reminds anglers that any water taken out of the lake will need to be dumped upon returning ashore, and a backup water option should be readily available, provided by the angler, if they want to keep the bait alive. These last few years, obviously the bait's gotten more expensive, and what they're telling me is, it's expensive, I can't afford to do this, meaning dump everything out. You know, like if you have creek chubs. They're $3 a piece or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Even though AIS rules don't explicitly state aerated bait buckets must be dumped, the benefit of the rules outweigh any friction some of the watercraft inspectors may experience on the job. They say clean, drain, and dispose is a big message to boaters. Vast majority of boaters, is 97%. Incoming watercraft arrived in compliance. Well, that's the case. They said, who's been in her role for about a year, this person. They teach all new inspectors bait management will be a topic that may receive more pushback from anglers than anything else. The team trained about 800 watercraft inspectors to disperse around the state. Here's my point. There are AIS inspectors that are enforcing a rule that's not a rule. If I have a bait bucket and I have, let's say, willow cats in my bait bucket.
Right.
I have no need to replenish it because I have dual stone aerators in that. I don't want to put lake water in it. I'm not going to put lake water in it.
Right.
It doesn't state that I have to dump it. If you're telling me I have to dump it, I'm not going to dump it because it's not a rule violation because I have not entered any water in from a lake.
Pretty hard to prove, though. I mean, I had this happen a few years ago and coming out of a lake, and I had the aerated bait bucket.
Yep.
And the water in the bucket came from the bait shop.
Mm-hmm.
So the bait bucket never went into the lake. Nothing from the lake went into the bait bucket other than the minnows I took out of it.
Yep.
And I got back to shore, and of course there was an inspector there, and he says, you have to dump that. I go, where? I mean, he couldn't even tell me where to dump it because it's illegal to dump it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was...
That's why I say,
yeah.
This is not, it doesn't explicitly say you have to, if you have a non-contaminated bucket, and I would take it, if it went that way, I'd say it's not explicitly written. If they're going to write you a ticket, I would take it and say, fine, we'll fight it. It just, that point gets really difficult because a lot of anglers out there, it's your prime example. This is a reason that they wanted a garbage facility because a lot of places don't have it. So right. What would you like me to do with it? How would you like me to dispose of it? If I can't travel with it, I don't have anywhere to put it.
Well, what I don't get is it's not illegal to go to the lake with the same bucket, but you can't leave the lake with it.
That's my point.
I mean, it doesn't make sense.
You don't know where that came from. They don't know where that came from. The water, if they're really going to follow the rule, what they should do, you can chime in here too, Ava, if you want.
I'll be careful. They'll make you tag the bait where it comes from and...
What they would do is they'd say, you have to dump all that water out.
Fill it back up with...
And then fill it up back with lake water. Then you have to dump it out when you get there. How about that?
Yeah.
So I guess my point being, when it comes down to this piece of that puzzle, the ruling, this is an AIS, this is somebody taking it on their own to say that you have to dump it. I can say... If they ask me,
it's not written in the rule. It's not written in the law.
It's not.
I think bait needs to be disposed of.
No.
It's not stated.
It's not stated that if you have a bait bucket in your boat that's separate from any water, it's not part of it. So
you're saying you're going to the lake with an uncontaminated bait bucket.
Mm.
Now, in your case, there's a chance of it being contaminated.
Why?
Well, there's possibly beer in there at one time.
Oh, well, beer. Beer is always not, that doesn't necessarily count.
As contamination.
No.
Okay. No, and I do not drink
and boat. Is there a multi-purpose?
I don't do that. Boating and drinking is not a good thing. It's not.
You don't take beer to the boat, but you can take the cooler and go to your concert.
There is that. But I don't need to aerate my beer cooler, though.
You don't need the aerators.
You can just, oh, you don't?
You just put some ice in there.
Oh, all right.
Uncontaminated ice.
Oh, Don.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to flip through. We're going to jump
By the way, you were, this whole conversation was based around laws in Minnesota.
Yeah.
What's going on in the rest of the Midwest, I'm not sure.
Well, but I will say
But all states are concerned with AIS, so.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. So my guess is they're probably going to be
similar.
Very similar. So check, obviously, regulations in your state. And
maybe they've got a solution. They could help us out.
That would be great. I'd like that. So, Don, this is a story we missed last week. We talked about it as soon as we get done with the show. I said, oh, we get to gabbing. And, well, no, we just got to gabbing. Am I wrong, Ava? I mean,
no, you guys are pretty good gabbers.
You know, it just flows. Things happen. So, does your rifle cartridge match your personality?
I sure hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. It depends on what I'm doing.
Okay. So, some of the things that can modify the actual piece of that puzzle. Is that weapon a passed down rifle or shotgun?
And is it passed down from
an heirloom? I'm just saying, like an heirloom.
Yeah, like an heirloom. Is somebody get, so that would kind of be not including into that side of it. Yeah. Yep. So number one, the academic. If you're constantly looking to increase your efficacy, are looking to squeeze out every bit of performance in your hunting rifle, and have run numbers in ballistic calculators, you are truly a student of the game. Your rifle choice probably will reflect that, and you have one purpose built for your mission. As far as a cartridge choice to suit your personality, you'd be hard-pressed not to choose one of the modern rifle cartridge designs in the PRC family of a 7 PRC, 6.5, or 300. The 6.5 Creedmoor and 6.8 Western can also be thrown into the mix. These cartridges are efficient as modern ballistics allow, utilizing high BC bullets, stretching your maximum ethical range while keeping the recoil to a minimum.
So what's the personality there? Because I had two of the three.
That's an academic. You're an academic of the game.
Okay.
Jack of all trades. If you like to keep things simple and minimalistic, you likely want one gun that will work well for all North American big game species. That way you only need to outfit and maintain one rifle and one rifle only. Sure, you can shoot elk with a 243 and a whitetail with a 300 win mag, but you want something in the middle of the road, something that's jack of all trades, master of none. You'll likely confide with a 7mm cartridge like 7mm Remington Mag, 280 Ackley, improved, or if you prefer a larger 30 caliber, you may go for the trusty 30-06 or 308. Between the two, a 270 Win or a 6.8 Western are also great. You're not saying anything, Don.
That'd probably be me.
You?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're the jack of all trades. The surgeon. Accuracy is your prime concern above all else, which means low recoil is a must. You believe in putting the bullet in the right spot over maximum energy and displacement. It's number one is putting the bullet in the right spot. To accomplish it, 6.5 Creedmoor and or 6mm Creedmoor are your preference. Similarly, 7mm 08 is the perfect low recoil medicine for deer-sized game and even elk at moderate ranges. Don's quiet.
Yeah, I'm kind of going the other direction.
The 110% guy. If you tend to believe that anything we're doing is worth doing overdoing, then there's no replacement for displacement. You're willing to endure more recoil if that's what it takes. You're likely to choose a heavier gun and accessories to absorb some of that recoil energy. Favorite choices, 28 Nosler, 300 Rum, 338 Winchester Mag, or the heavy-hitting 33 Nosler.
Yeah, I don't have any of those.
The specialist, if you appreciate optimizing performance in a specific task, literally an arsenal of sporting rifles, you're likely to choose something like a 25-06 for its flat shooting trajectory. That's what I've got.
I have a 25-06 too.
Maximum point blank range, introducing challenging environmental factors such as large critters. etc., etc. If you want speed and forgiveness, you're looking forward to 264 Win Mag or Weatherby 6.5. The fail-safe guy heard the argument. Forget your ammo at home. You'll likely be glad you're shooting a 30-06 or 308 and fear it's happening to you. You choose something that's likely to be on the shelves at your local sporting goods store. Can't go wrong with a classic 7mm mag or 300 Win Mag either. The historian, whether you're a lifelong gun collector or cherish your grandfather's 30-06, the classics are up your alley. 30-30, 257 Robert, and 270 Winchester. The contrarian, the last two, you don't know why you don't do it intentionally, but everyone else is zigging you zag. Even advancements in powders and bullets and everything else. But if it doesn't get any cooler than this, the 7 Psalm 6.5-284 Norma or the 280 Ackley are also there. And of course, the Economist, if you don't want to drop $100 every time, you're going to go for a 223 or 308. There you go, Don. What do you think?
True story.
We got 30 seconds,
yep,
Don.
You've 30 got 30 seconds.
I picked up, and this happened during the COVID, early, just before COVID hit, I picked up a 6.5 PRC. Took 2 years to get a box of ammo. I got plenty now.
That's crazy.
I would say you would. Speaking of plenty, we had plenty of time, and now we're out. Thanks for joining us, you guys. We are the Valley Outdoors. Hope all of you have a fantastic weekend. For Ava, Don, and myself, I'm Eric. We are happy to have you here. See ya.